Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
This episode is brought to you by Bumble. So, you want to find someone you're compatible with, specifically someone who's ready for a serious connection, totally open to having kids in the future, is a tall, rock-climbing Libra, and loves rom-coms with vegan pizzas on Tuesdays just as much as you do. Bumble knows that you know exactly what's right for you. So, whatever it is you're looking for, Bumble's features can help you find it. Date now on Bumble.
Tribe,
what's going on, guys? Hope you're having a great day. We got another awesome show for you. We welcome back Dr. David Lay, who came on the show super early on in I Do Podcast.
I think it's been maybe 5 years now. I think it was right toward the beginning after we took our little hiatus. Right when we started again, we interviewed him. So that was a good 4 or 5 years ago now.
The Stella hiatus. When our daughter was born.
Exactly. Well, Dr. David Lay is a psychologist and sex therapist who has appeared in the New York Times, on The Daily Show, and even Playboy magazine, as well as publishing numerous books and research articles on sexual issues.
And today we talk about sex, obviously, with Dr. Lay, and we talk about ways to meet our partner's sexual ideals, and also identify our own ideals as part of this process. And Dr. Lay gave us a lot of great information, not only with conversations around sex, but ways that we can have these conversations around communication, chores at the house, you name it. So a lot of great tools to apply to your relationship around sexuality and sexual ideals, but even other things as well.
Yeah. And I think the biggest thing I took away from this is, and he kind of ends it, wraps it up with it, is a really acceptance of your partner and their sexuality and how important it is to communicate your needs with your partner and to be open and not judgmental of your partner's sexual desires. So I think it's a really important takeaway from the show. But of course, you should listen to the whole thing because there's a lot of great takeaways from today's show. So as always, thank you so much for listening to the show, for sharing with your friends and family. And if you would like to support the podcast, there is a link in the show notes. It takes you to our Glow podcast listener support page where you can donate to the show. It just helps us produce the podcast and keep giving you guys this free content. So thank you guys so much, and we hope you enjoy today's show. Before we jump into today's interview, we want to tell you about our online course, Spark My Relationship. Do you guys want to create more passion, improve your communication, and build a stronger, more intimate connection with your partner in less than 90 days?
Yes, sign me up.
Then you guys need to check out our online course, Spark My Relationship. It is an online course, like I mentioned, that we created with over 15 therapists and psychologists to bring you guys the strategies marriage therapists teach their clients.
We talk about it on the show. Relationships take work. Sometimes they function pretty easily and you coast along, but we've found the reality is you have to do work sometimes and to make them better, to change them so that they're more satisfying for both partners.
And you've made it here. You've made it to listening to our show. So you guys probably already know that a little bit. But what you might not know are the specific tools and exercises that you need to create those lasting and positive improvements in your relationship. And like Chase said, change does not happen on its own. It takes hard work. And that's why we created the course.
Spark One Relationship is designed to infuse your life and relationship with fresh passion, skills, and wisdom. And it's a self-paced journey that's perfect for turning up the heat, having some fun together, and revolutionizing your intimacy and communication.
And just some tools and strategies that the course includes is to how to eliminate unhelpful old habits, develop mindful awareness to help improve your stress management, learn healthy and successful communication tools, create a deeper and more intimate bond, and strengthen your couple microculture, which you will find out what that is. In the future together. So for our listeners only, we're offering a special of $100 off the course. Visit sparkmyrelationship.com/unlock to unlock your discount. And there is a 30-day money-back guarantee, so there really is no reason to not give it a try. So go to sparkmyrelationship.com/unlock for $100 off. Hi, David. Thanks for joining us back on the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Today, we're going to talk about how to negotiate with our partner around sex. And we all have an idea of what our ideal sex life will look like. And oftentimes, those expectations are not met, either because they're unrealistic or any number of issues. So there's a lot to dissect here. So why don't we dive in and have you talk about some of the issues and some of the research you're seeing around conflicts with partners and not having their ideal idea of sex met in relationship?
Well, you know, it's an unfortunate reality that when we are sexually unsatisfied in a relationship, that sexual dissatisfaction contributes about 60% of the variance in our dissatisfaction with the relationship in general. So being sexually dissatisfied disproportionately impacts our happiness in the relationship overall. Now, the flip side of the coin is where things get really kind of mean is that being sexually satisfied in a relationship contributes only about 20% to our relationship satisfaction. So unfortunately, the side of the scales are weighted very heavily for dissatisfaction. That when we are sexually unhappy, when we don't feel like our partner is meeting our needs, it really makes it hard for us to be happy in the relationship. And so these researchers, led by a psychologist colleague of mine named Rhonda Balzerini, did this really remarkable research where they looked at, you know, what are the things that might mitigate it when we are sexually unsatisfied in a relationship? And they looked at kind of the concept of sexual ideals. So, you know, we all have kind of an idea of what sort of sex or sex partner we really would like. And in contrast, you know, to what you said a moment ago, I don't think actually most people have sat down and thought about that very much. I don't think that they have really considered how their sexual ideals, how their sexual preferences work for themselves. It's kind of unconscious. And one of the things that I do a lot with couples and patients is to invite them to think about sexuality when they're not turned on, to think about, you know, the best kind of sex they've ever had, to think about their sexual fantasies, to really understand themselves as a sexual being. And then we can explore, okay, in your current relationship, how is that met or not? Unfortunately, our society for a very long time has kind of minimized sexual needs. We basically teach people that, well, if you're in a happy relationship and your partner treats you good and they, you know, they put food on the table and they don't beat you, right, that you should be happy. The fact that you're not having the kind of sex that you really want to have, well, that's just not that big a deal. Sex is kind of optional. But what research finds, again, as I said, is that being sexually unsatisfied really makes people unhappy in life and relationship. So what Balzerini and her colleagues did was looked at this concept and said, okay, if we are in a relationship with somebody who doesn't meet our sexual ideals, for instance, maybe they don't like to give oral sex as much as we might like to receive it, or maybe they don't have a body type that we really are super attracted to. How do we manage that? Because we fall in love and we get in relationships with people who don't necessarily meet our sexual ideals. So is there a way to mitigate how much that kind of conflict impacts the relationship? And Balzerini and her colleagues did some really remarkable research that dug into this and gave us some ideas.
And obviously there's a lot to unpack here, and we want to dive into that research. But first, you mentioned how you work with clients to understand their own sexual ideals. And I'm sure that's a whole process, and maybe you can share a little bit more, but I'm thinking it's like we have an idea of what we want, but sometimes that's not what will really, it's not really what we want, if that makes sense. Because sexuality and we're so complicated to begin with, we have ideas of what it should be based on culture, pornography. And so we might be like, yeah, I want this and this, but it's not really what we want. So how do you dive into that with your clients, maybe in a little bit more detail?
Well, you know, a lot of times I start the conversation by asking, you know, what kind of food do you like, right? Do you like salty food or sweet food? You know, do you like rich carbohydrate, you know, laden food, or do you prefer kind of a good salad, right? And then I ask them, well, how did you end up as a person that likes that sort of food? Well, a lot of times when we really kind of think about it, we just kind of gravitated towards that. Maybe we made some conscious choices about trying to be healthy, right? But even within those conscious choices, there are some things we like maybe, you know, some people like kale and other people don't. I mean, I hate Brussels sprouts. If you come at me with a Brussels sprout, I'm going to throw it across the room. Why don't I like Brussels sprouts? I don't know. Something about, you know, my body and my taste, it just doesn't work for me. But we never sit down and think about sexuality in that same way. I agree with you that there are some things that we might want sexually that we choose consciously not to pursue. The problem is when we shame ourselves or we shame other people for having that sexual desire, maybe for homosexual sex, maybe for kinky sex, maybe for more sex than the other one that our partner really wants. The challenge is when we treat that conflict as though it means there's something wrong with you. If you don't like the same kind of food I like, I don't think that you're broken. I don't think that you're deficient. I don't think that you're immoral. But if you want a kind of sex that maybe I don't want, a lot of times people do judge other people. So I invite people to start thinking about it in those kinds of ways, because the reality is we actually don't know why or how any of us end up with a certain kind of sexual desire or not. It kind of like taste for sweets or salty foods. It just sort of happens. It's a combination of our biology, our genetics, our environment growing up. And there's a tiny bit of conscious choice in there, but not as much as we would really like. So those are the ways I start these conversations, inviting, giving people permission to have these sexual desires. I mean, the research shows that about 50% of people have a sexual desire or fantasy that we used to think was unhealthy or abnormal, and they kept it secret just because they knew that therapists or doctors or their lovers or wives or husbands would think that there was something wrong with them if they shared it. You know, and maybe that was a fantasy for exhibitionism or 50 Shades of Grey kind of behaviors. But they kept it secret because they thought there was something wrong with them for having it. Now what we find out is that, you know, 50% of people are not wrong. And in fact, that these sexual variations are just kind of the wide spectrum of human sexuality working out in each other. And the more we can accept that in ourselves, now the less we shame ourselves and the less likely we are to be shamed by others when we accept that in ourselves without judgment. So, yeah, those are the ways I start these conversations with people, just to develop that acceptance within themselves. And I use the concept of sexual integrity, which means that you have done some analysis of yourself to think about what you like sexually, what you want sexually, and how you feel about that. Can you accept those desires in yourself? The more we can treat our sexual desires with dignity, the more dignity we receive from others when we start to express or share them with our partner.
Before we continue on, we want to tell you about today's sponsors. Today's episode is brought to you by Trivia Star.
Do you and your partner want to keep your mind sharp and have some fun? If trivia keeps you on your toes and entertained, then you need to check out Trivia Star. It's a great way to test yourself and have some fun.
Trivia Star is a free mobile quiz game that has been entertaining and challenging for us to play, especially right now when we are spending a lot more time indoors and doing less activities. You can choose from categories like music, sports, movies, TV, animals, and celebrities, and there are over 60 different categories to choose from. So there's always more trivia to explore. If you choose a correct answer from the multiple choices and beat the clock, you move on to the next level.
And the questions get harder over time. But if you get stuck, don't worry. You can use coins and gems to get a hint and beat the level. And I've been using plenty of those to help me beat the levels. Cheating maybe a little bit, but it's part of the game.
You don't know the answers?
Most of the time I do, but occasionally I use my gems and coins. And Trivia Star has 2,000 five-star reviews in the Apple Store.
So right now, Trivia Star is offering you 2,500 coins and 500 gems when you download and play. Just go to the Apple or the Google Store and search for Trivia Star. Again, search Trivia Star and enjoy 2,500 coins and 500 gems. Download Trivia Star for free today. Your voice matters. My voice matters. And every eligible voter has the right to make their voice matter. I was lucky enough to vote in my first presidential election the year I turned 18, and I haven't missed a presidential election yet because I know how lucky I am that I'm able to exercise my right to vote. But not everyone can say the same. Unfortunately, there are many African Americans, Latino Americans, Native Americans, Asian Americans, young people, and people with disabilities that are being prevented from exercising their right to share their vision of America. Whether it's making it harder for them to register to vote, closing polling places, or rejecting lawful ballots, we need to make sure that every eligible voter who wants to vote can vote. And your vote can help make that difference. You don't have to wait until November 3rd to cast your ballot. Be an October voter. In most states, you can vote early in October. Request your mail ballot, return your completed ballot in the mail or in person, or vote early at an early voting location. There's no time to waste. Treat every day like election day to make sure all voices are heard. Make a plan to vote. Be an October voter. Visit and stillivote.org to join the fight for voting rights today. Again, that's andstillivote.org to join the fight for voting rights today. Paid for by the Leadership Conference Education Fund. Now, are these conversations that you're starting with people, is it generally couples or is it individuals? And if it's individuals, how do they then bring, you know, those questions and that dialogue into their relationship with their partner to, I guess, start that exploration process?
Yeah, so I work with both. I don't work with high conflict couples because I know myself, and high levels of conflict in my office just makes me want to hide under my desk. So when I work with couples, they tend to be couples, you know, who are a little higher functioning, and you know, they're looking to try and negotiate ways around these issues to improve their sexual connections. With individuals, I do a lot of this, and I use a variety of kind of strategies. There are some assessment measures that I use. I have a sexual values test that I use, which helps people to really start to drill down and think about what are my priorities? What are the things that in sex that I really value and think are important? What are the things that make sex better or worse for me? The important thing is that we think about these things when we're not turned on. Because it's a funny thing about human biology and sexuality is that when we are turned on, we're more impulsive and we use less judgment. We are more likely to do things when we're turned on than we are when we're not turned on. You know, that sex kind of gives us, you know, sex goggles, kind of like beer goggles, where when we're turned on, we're more likely to have a kind of kinky sex or maybe have sex with somebody that we don't really like or that we wouldn't have sex with when we're not horny. But what that means is then that we need to think about our sexuality and our sexual desires and interests and our sexual behaviors when we're not turned on, because that's when we can now use sort of good judgment and good rational thinking to think about how do I want to integrate those ideas about sex into my identity? How do I feel about them? Say, you know, there is some sexual desire that I have, maybe being spanked, that I feel really ashamed of, that I never want to tell a partner about. Well, why do I feel ashamed about that? Where does that come from? Is it because I don't want to be submissive? Is it because I'm worried that a person might hit me too hard and hurt me? When we start now to think about those kinds of issues is where we now get to unpack. And that's where we start to now develop a way where we could say to our partner, look, hey, I'd kind of like you to spank me when we have sex, but I don't want you to hit me too hard. And I want to make sure before you spank me that you still love me, that you're not thinking that I am some bad, awful person because I want you to spank me. I don't actually want you to hit me in real life. This is just a kinky kind of sex thing that I think would be fun. Are you okay with that? So that's how we take this personal insight and now start to communicate it and share it with our partner.
So once we've worked on developing that personal insight, and there's a lot there, and I'm sure that's an ongoing process as well, how can we, and you're alluding to it now with that example you just gave, but how can we start to communicate with our partner what it is that our ideal sex would look like? And then if there's a mismatch there, which there probably often is, how can we navigate that?
Yeah. And that's the thing that the Balzerini in this research really explored. They said, look, you know, across a lifetime of relationship, we are going to be in situations where we have a mismatch, where I want a kind of sex that my partner doesn't, there's some other kind of overlap. You know, maybe our bodies change. Maybe we have health issues that make it more difficult for us to have the kind of sex that we might want to have, et cetera. And so that, how do we mitigate that when we no longer really match our partner? And they, what was neat about this study was that they did not look at just heterosexual male-female couples. They and instead they looked at a range of couples, LGBT couples. They looked at people in open relationships. They looked at, you know, people across the racial and ethnic kind of spectrum, and included a lot of different kinds of folks in this. So the neat thing about this then is that this is an issue that works sort of for everybody, not just heterosexual religious married couples, which unfortunately a lot of kind of classic marital therapy research it was looking at. So how do we apply it to other people? What Balzerini and her colleagues found was this concept of sexual communion. And it really is a very powerful sort of concept. And the idea of sexual communion is I get something positive. I get a warm, fuzzy feeling out of you, my partner, being sexually fulfilled. I get happiness out of the idea of you getting the kind of sex that you that you want or really would make you feel good. Even if you can't have that kind of sex, say we are in a heterosexual relationship, but you're bisexual, and you want sex with somebody that doesn't have the same kind of genitalia that I do, but we've agreed to be monogamous. That is a really challenging kind of relationship dynamic. And in fact, research with couples like that, where one partner is bisexual and the other is heterosexual, has found that when the heterosexual partner does not accept their bisexual partner's sexuality, that it increases risk of depression, anxiety, and suicide. But when the heterosexual partner accepts their partner's bisexuality, even if they're not acting on it, but we don't judge our partner for it, that improves both the relationship outcome and the mental health of the bisexual person. The same thing is what Balzerini and her colleagues found here is that when I accept my partner's sexuality, when I think about ways that it would feel good for you to be able to explore that sexuality, when I no longer judge you for having a sexual desire that doesn't exactly match me, it improves the relationship outcome and it minimizes the level of sexual dissatisfaction that my partner might feel. Because remember what I said, remember that sexual dissatisfaction disproportionately contributes to relationship dissatisfaction. But if I am high in sexual communion, polyamorous call this compersion, where I feel a warm fuzzy when you are happy sexually or in a relationship with other people. So the thing about this, it doesn't mean you have to be sexual with other people. It doesn't even mean you have to have the kind of sex that we are mismatched on. But if I don't judge you on it, and if I accept it in you, and if I get that happy feeling at the idea that you could really experience that sort of sexual fulfillment, even if you can't, it makes it so that relation, that sexual dissatisfaction does not contribute to a high level of relationship dissatisfaction. In other words, it mitigates the potential negative effects of our sexual mismatch. The thing about this, and it's a little complicated to kind of think about, but this sexual communion effect, it only goes one way. If I am high in sexual communion, it improves the relationship and the sexual satisfaction feelings for you, my partner, but not for me, myself. The only way I can get that effect if we are in a relationship where we mismatch sexually is if my partner is high in sexual communion. So we have to give acceptance and respect and sexual love to each other in order to get it for ourselves. That's one of the things I really love about this research and this finding is that it's not something we take, it is something we give. And as we give to our partner, we hope that they give back. And that's how relationship and sexual satisfaction and sexual communion works, that it is something we do together to make the relationship better for each other.
Sexual communion is such a powerful tool to use it as a tool because it's like a hack into this mm-hmm. idea that we have to be perfectly matched. It's like, and I want to dive into that a little, that idea a little bit too, but yeah, it's highly unlikely we're going to just meet every ideal of our partner and for that to go both ways. So if we can take this approach and more importantly, understand our sexual ideals and then communicate these things with our partner, hey, what can I do to make you more satisfied? And then that is mutually met on the other side, then things are going to be, you know, a lot better. But with that in mind, do you think that there are incompatibilities, or obviously there's going to be situations where people are closer in their ideals and it's going to be maybe a little bit easier or further apart? And what do you think about just as a relationship whole and taking sexuality as a part of that whole, the fundamental maybe differences between two people being too much or just maybe not even too much, but a real stress on the relationship, no matter how much they're willing to dive into sexual communion with their partner?
So every relationship is different. And, you know, as a therapist, what I focus on more is not so much the problem or the conflict. Instead, I focus on the resources and the skills that we can use to overcome that problem. Because for, you know, for some couples that don't have very good skills, they don't have good communication skills, they don't have good emotional management kind of abilities, a small problem is going to be very, very challenging for them. So rather than trying to fix the problem, what I try and do is help them develop the skills to make that problem not quite so significant. So I teach them how to, you know, use I language to communicate their feelings as opposed to trying to tell their partner, you know, you made me jealous. Well, no, I felt jealous when you did this. That's a very different kind of statement and a very different perspective. So we start to build up those resources and the skills. So to be honest, I don't think that there is any insurmountable conflict or problem or mismatch over sexuality when we can help people approach it with a place of mutual respect, non-judgmental listening, unconditional acceptance, and where we start to send the message, look, what we're talking about right now is not whether that kind of sexuality happens or not. What we're talking about is the fact that I accept and love you. I don't judge you for having this kind of sexual interest that doesn't quite match me, because I know that there's lots and lots in our life where we do match. This one, frankly, oftentimes little place of mismatch is oftentimes overly influential in relationship satisfaction. So how can we pull that back? How can we, you know, most couples have sex, what, 1 to 3 times a week, if that, when they've been together for a while. They have more sex when they first start, you know, in their relationship. But why it doesn't seem fair that once a week thing should contribute so heavily to satisfaction with the relationship for the whole rest of the week. So how do we address that? And the message here is that we start accepting each other as different beings who are kind of coming together. And I, you know, it doesn't make me unhappy all week that you like salty foods and I like sweets. Instead, when we're at dinner, right, I might look at the menu and say, oh, hey, did you see this? It looks like something you would really like. That's the kind of acceptance and mutuality and unconditional positive regard that we can give to each other around sexuality. Now, it doesn't mean that we have to go negotiating you going out and acting on it. There's lots and lots of shades of gray here where we can talk about role play, for instance. We can talk about fantasy. We can talk about, you know, private pornography use or masturbation to those fantasies. The key here is acceptance. That is the foundation on which a healthy sexual relationship is built. Let us create that foundation, and then we move forward on what sexuality kind of looks like.
After, you know, 260 interviews, this is the first time I think we've heard, and correct me if I'm wrong, Chase, what you said about letting one day, one instance in a week ruin the whole relationship or the whole week. And I think that's just brilliant to think about, because sometimes we just get caught up in our own mind and our own emotions, and that we really forget the big picture and it becomes so much of a focus. So I love that you mentioned that. And I think it's really important for us and our listeners to really think about.
Yeah. You know, again, the funny thing and the unfortunate thing is that when we are sexually dissatisfied, when we feel like our sexual needs are not met, it does become something that we over-focus on. Mm-hmm. Because it starts to become and starts to feel so important. But when we are accepted, when our partner, you know, says, you know, gosh, you know, I wish I liked, you know, doing this thing that you like so much. And what if we talk about, you know, ways that we could increase that? Or what if we talk about, you know, what if we fantasize sometimes about you doing that with me? Then it starts to make it and that unhappiness much less important. Because you know what? Then we're not alone in it. When we are sexually dissatisfied, we feel alone and kind of desperate. But here we're talking about using this marriage, using this relationship as a partnership on this dissatisfaction, on this mismatch. You're not alone anymore. I know that you wish this could happen more, and I'm sad, and I wish it could happen for you too.
And I also want to highlight what you said about not focusing on the problem, focusing on the skills to solve it or work on it. That's such a great perspective to take around sexuality or communication or really anything in a relationship. So thank you for that, David. And you've given us a lot of great things like that to think about today. Before we wrap up, David, is there anything that we skipped over or you forgot to mention, or something you want to highlight for our listeners before we say goodbye?
Just that, you know, your listeners can find me at davidlayphd.com. And I've written about this research in an article called 3 Ways to Meet Your Partner's Sexual Ideals and Why You Should. And it explores some of the other kind of nuances and details of this. I think that this model might revolutionize couples therapy around sexual mismatch in some really positive and healthy ways.
Wonderful. We'll have the links to your website and all your resources in the show notes and on our website at idpodcast.com. And thanks again for coming back on the show. We really enjoyed today's talk.
I'm happy to. Thank you guys. And it's always lovely to talk to you.
Thanks so much for tuning in to today's show, guys. As always, the links will be in the podcast description as well as on the show notes on our website at idopodcast.com. And while you're on our website, we hope you guys check out our free 14-day Happy Couple Challenge. It's a challenge where we send you a daily email for 14 days with easy, doable challenges to help strengthen and improve your relationship. And it's honestly just a whole lot of fun to do with your partner. It's something new, and we think you guys will really enjoy it. So check it out. And while you're on the website, there are tons of free resources, as well as more information about our online course, Spark My Relationship, where our listeners can get $100 off. So check that out. You can go directly to the course website at sparkmyrelationship.com/unlock. And that's where you can get the $100 off. So thank you guys for tuning in, and we'll see you next week.
You are listening to a Pleasure Podcast. For more from our sex podcast collective, visit pleasurepodcasts.com.